You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. This week, we remember Florence Henderson, who died on November 24th at the age of 82. Florence Henderson was a performer who starred on Broadway, in Las Vegas nightclubs, and of course, on television. She was the lovely lady who merged her family with a man named Brady to create the Brady Bunch.
Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls. It's the story of a man named Brady who was busy with three boys of his own. They were four men living all together, yet they were all alone. Till the one day when the lady met this fellow, and they knew that it was much more than a hunt, that this group must somehow form a family. That's the way we all became the Brady Bunch, the Brady Bunch, the Brady Bunch. That's the way we became the Brady Bunch.
The show ran for five seasons before entering the world of perpetual reruns and occasional reunions and specials.
Here's the story of the family Brady. A mom and dad with all their children grown. Our kids are now pursuing their dreams with families of their own. When our kids were small, their problems all were smaller. As they changed, so did their point of view. The world has taken on a larger meaning since the family grew. The Bradys, oh, the Bradys, that's how the Brady Bunch became the Brady.
Florence Henderson started her career as a singing ingenue on the stage. Let's listen to her cast recording of Oklahoma with John Raitt, recorded in the early 1950s.
Why do they think up stories that link my name with yours?
Why do the neighbors gossip all day behind their doors?
I have a way to prove what they say is quite untrue. Here is the gist, a practical list of dogs for you. Don't throw a gaze at me. Don't leave.
Some people claim that you are to blame as much as I. Why do you take the trouble to bake my favorite pie? Grant me your wish, I carved our initials on that tree. Just keep a slice of all the advice you give so free. Don't praise my charm too much. Don't look so vain with me. Don't stand in the rain with me. People will say we're in love.
Henderson and John Raitt singing from the cast recording of Oklahoma. I had a special connection with the late Florence Henderson. When I was in high school, my girlfriend was Florence Henderson's daughter, the talented Barbara Chase. Florence Henderson was very welcoming to me and was kind enough to take Barbara and me along with her to work on many occasions. She introduced me to Jack Parr and Johnny Carson and Lucille Ball. When Florence was a guest on the Kate Smith Show, she actually plucked me from the audience and danced with me on television. When I was in a play at school and my performance was on the same night as Florence Henderson's performance at the Sands in Las Vegas, Florence was thoughtful enough to send along a menu from the showroom, signed not only by her, but by all her friends, Bob Newhart and Burt Reynolds and Don Rickles. Sweet, right? Barbara was cast as a school friend of Greg Brady's on an episode of The Brady Bunch. The episode was called The Harebrained Scheme. And it turned out to be the final episode of the series, although no one knew it at the time on that day. I was lucky enough to be invited to watch the filming of the episode, and then I got to eat lunch with the cast at the historic Formosa Cafe next to the studio. I sat next to Ann B. Davis, and I peppered her with questions about her career and about playing Schultzy on Love That Bob. When high school ended, so did my romance with Barbara. But I followed Florence Henderson, who was a frequent presence on television. She was on talk shows and game shows. She was always on game shows like the Hollywood Squares and Password and the $25,000 Pyramid. A dozen years later, I happened to be watching a game show called Tattletales, hosted by Bert Convy. It was Celebrity Mother and Daughter Week, and Florence Henderson and her daughter were the guests.
Okay, here we go, ladies. This is the $300 question. It is for you. If I can find it, here it is. Mothers, oh, you got to think now. Can you name the very first boy your daughter fell in love with? Yes or no? Goodbye. Tough question. Wow. Okay, Barbara, what do you think? What will your mom say?
Well, I'm thinking in terms of a little older than these girls are, but I think she's going to say yes.
Yeah?
Definitely.
A little older before you had your first real love, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah? What was his name? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, but I'm not telling.
You're not going to tell?
I'm so glad it's a yes or no.
Okay. Yeah, and she remembers, too.
Mm-hmm. But she'll tell you.
Okay, she will? All right, good. The answer is yes. Here she comes. Florence, what do you think? It's a yes or no question, of course. Can you remember?
I don't think I should mention this little louse's name on television, to tell you the truth. No, actually, he was a very sweet boy, and I hope I'm thinking of the right one. But I would say Gary Shapiro.
But that's not the question. The answer is, can you remember yes or no?
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, now I really... It'll kill me. Can you... Oh, please. I misunderstood. Yes, I...
That's right. You're right. You're all right. We split the 300 three ways, but time is up. The red section wins it. I will come back, give them money, and hello, Gary Shapiro.
You can't make this stuff up, folks. Of course, I wrote to Florence and I told her that I would have to sue her and Bert Convy for mentioning my name because the firm I was with had to fire me when they discovered that I was mixed up with show people. I got a very sweet letter back. In 2013, Florence Henderson published her autobiography and was my guest on From the Bookshelf. Let's listen back to that conversation right now. Florence Henderson, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. Thank you for having me.
You know, you were part of like three golden ages in the entertainment world, the golden age of Broadway, the golden age of television, the golden age of Las Vegas nightclubs.
Yeah, what? Aren't I lucky?
Yeah, I guess so. And very talented.
Thank you.
And you worked for Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that was the second job I ever had right out of the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York City. I had... gone to an audition for a show called Wish You Were Here, directed by Josh Logan. The score was by Harold Rome, and I got a small part in the show. And after being in it for a couple of months, I went to another open call audition, and it was for Rodgers and Hammerstein, and I got the lead in the last National Company of Oklahoma. And so that's how far back I go with Rodgers and Hammerstein.
What were they like, those guys?
Well, you know, after my my audition, this gentleman walked down to the, you know, to the foot of the stage, and you know, said that was very nice, young lady, and anyway, it turned out to be Richard Rodgers, and he had asked me to come back and sing for his partner a little later. At the time, I didn't know that was Richard Rodgers until I asked him who his partner was, and he said Oscar Hammerstein. And I said, oh, you must be Richard Rodgers. But they were wonderful. I mean, I feel so blessed to have known them. They really mentored me. And I did so many of their shows and sang so much of their music. And I still think no one writes a melody like Richard Rodgers.
Those songs were pretty modern songs. I mean, they still feel pretty modern, especially things like People Will Say We're in Love.
Yes. Yeah.
Are those songs hard to sing?
Oh, yes. They were very hard to sing. And not only that, Rodgers was a real stickler for you singing the way it was written. And, you know, so if it was a whole note, a dotted whole note, you better hold it for those five counts or whatever. And we used to laugh, you know, that he his tempi was very slow. And... and I'm sure there was a reason for that, but we used to laugh, you know, you needed extra oxygen just to be able to sing his music the way he wanted it. But, yeah, they were not easy to sing, but Oscar also always seemed to put a wonderful word on a difficult note. You know, it was either an open vowel that you could really sing easily.
Why should a woman who is healthy and strong love her like a baby if a man goes away? A weeping and a wailing how he's done her wrong. That's one thing you'll never hear me say. Never gonna think that the man I lose is the only man among men. I'll snap my fingers to show I don't care. I'll buy me a brand new dress to wear. I'll screw my neck and I'll brush my hair and start all over again. Many a new face will please my eye. Many a new love will find me. Never have I once looked back to sigh over the romance behind. behind me. Many a new day will dawn before I do. Many a light lad may kiss and fly, a kiss gone by is bygone. Never have I asked an August sky, when has last you lie gone? Never have I wandered through the rye, wondering where has some guy gone? Many a new day will dawn before I do.
I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. We're listening to my 2013 interview with Florence Henderson. She passed away on November 24th at the age of 82. When you did, you played Laurie.
Yes.
Did you do the, you know, Laurie has that sort of cocaine trip that she has in the middle of the thing where they dance. Did you do the dancing there, too, or did they have other dancers?
And no, traditionally, there's always another dancer. It was supposed to be her dream.
Yeah.
And the dancing Laurie appears behind her while she's, you know, having this dream. And then Laurie eases off stage, and the dancing Curly and the dancing Laurie take over and do the ballet.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah, and I don't know anybody who did that except Hugh Jackman. I think he danced it.
Right, he did his own.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a good production also.
Yeah, I didn't get to see that one, but I did recently, just to digress, I saw Hugh Jackman's one-man show in New York, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah, he looks a lot like me.
Does he?
Yeah, people are constantly mistaking me for him.
Really?
Well, maybe not.
And do you sing like him and dance like him? And
oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, naturally. Well, then you were on Broadway in Fanny. That was your...
Yeah, that was my first really big break, yeah.
And Josh Logan put that show together?
Yes, he was the director of that, and Harold Rome wrote that score. And
Harold Rome, he later did a musical version of Gone with the Wind.
Oh, well, I never got to see that.
No one ever saw it.
I don't think. Unfortunately. But
he was great, Harold.
Yeah, Lawrence, he was, and very nice man. And Josh Logan, of course, was a genius. And, of course, you know, getting to work with H.C. Alpinza, the great opera singer, and Walter Slezak, who was a big movie star, it was a big break for me.
How long did that show run?
Oh, gosh, I was in it for, let's see. I started rehearsals in 1954 in the summer. I never missed a show until January 1956.
Wow.
And then I had like a week off to get married, and I came back and was with the show until about September. So I was in it over 2 years, and it ran much longer than that.
So what's it like to do a show day after day and two shows on the weekends and all that?
Well, you know, they hardly do that anymore, but it was a challenge. I mean, you have to have a lot of stamina, and when I started, there were no body mics. I mean, you had to be able to project and fill the theater 8 shows a week. And I don't know, I loved it. That was part of the challenge for me, and, you know, being able to apply all the techniques I learned to keep a performance fresh and to be able to do it night after night, and to remember that that audience has never seen the show before. Unless, you know, you're Cary Grant. I think he came 6 times to see Fanny. You know, but usually the audience, they're fresh, and you just have to remember that and not, you know, not sleepwalk through it.
Yeah, and that must
be... And the same with nightclubs, you know.
Yeah.
When I was doing Vegas and places like that, you know, you do 2 shows a night, maybe for a month. And I remember Johnny Carson saying he finally quit Vegas because by the second show, he'd be in the middle of the act and go, I think I said this. I think I just told that joke. And, the repetition is very interesting.
Well, I guess it's actually harder if it's not scripted. But was your nightclub act scripted?
Oh, yes, very, very much so.
So it was like
there are spontaneous moments, but, you know, it's all planned and written and absolutely.
Well, having acted in all those different mediums, acting on the stage, you've acted in film and you've acted on television and you've acted, you know, in television commercials and all that stuff.
Right.
Is it a different skill? Are those different kinds of acting?
Well, it's interesting. You know, when I started, let's say on Broadway, it was everything had to be big, you know, and there was a projection there. And on, you know, film, you don't have to do that. You know, the mic is right there and the camera's there. And so you learn these different techniques. And, you know, it's great fun. But in the end, I mean, I think it's really, do you care about what you're doing? Do you really want to do your very best? And that's sort of how I've always lived my life and my career. You know, I just, whatever the job is, I want to do it to the very best of my ability. And you know, the producers and directors, they all have their visions. And so you try to fulfill those visions for people and for yourself.
We're chatting with Florence Henderson, and her new book is called Life is Not a Stage. And it's a marvelous book. Thank you for writing it.
Oh, thanks, Gary.
It must have been a different experience to do that, too. I mean, you really had to kind of dig deep in your book. It's almost, in some ways, it's like a self-help book.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I you know, I've written speeches and things like that, but this was a very daunting process. I mean, to go back to places in your life that, you know, you dealt with. And however, I thought if I'm going to write an autobiography, I want to be truthful. And the purpose for writing it was really the hope that perhaps other people would find hope and inspiration when they're facing difficult challenges in life, as we all do from time to time. And I hope I achieved that. I think I did.
Well, I think readers of the book will really feel like they know you and know things about you that only your best friends would know.
Right.
Do you, now that it's out there, is there anything, do you feel like, oh, maybe I said too much, or?
Well, having always been a pretty private person, that was very hard for me to be truthful about a lot of things. But, you know, I love autobiographies and biographies, and I always know when people are sugarcoating or, you know, they're not being absolutely truthful and making themselves look really great. And I just think if you're going to write a book about your life, you have to be truthful. And that includes, you know, the warts and all.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your days on live television in the very early days of TV. So when you were in New York, you were on the stage and you were doing television at the same time?
Yes, I started doing television pretty early in my career. My first TV appearance was actually off camera on the Ed Sullivan Show when I was in Wish You Were Here. But then I went on to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I became a regular on the Jack Parr Show, and went on to Johnny Carson, and I did every variety show known to man and every game show. And, you know, live television is very exciting. I mean, you fly by the seat of your pants. And you know, that experience, I think, stands you in very good stead if you want to have a long career, which was always my goal, was to have longevity.
Do you think it affected your career in any negative way? That is, you know, because you were always Florence Henderson on television and on the game shows and playing mm-hmm. Password and all, that people would have trouble accepting you in a dramatic role?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, I've done a few dramatic roles, and, I am an actress. That's what I was trained to do. I do think that in a lot of producers' minds, especially in this country, they can really try to put you in a certain hole. That's where you belong, and you can't do anything else. But I've never felt restricted in my career. I belong to all five unions. I work in all of them, and it's always fun. You know, it's always a challenge. But I don't know. I think television is such a great medium, and I think it really exposes people. You know, if you're out there and you're not being honest and truthful, I don't think you last very long in television.
You know, your career kind of bridges some eras in American entertainment, and you knew some of the really famous people of the previous era. I mean, I saw you on a Bing Crosby show. You were doing a commercial for...
That was one of the first things. Yes, I did Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
Commercial. That was years ago. And it's just interesting how my career developed. And then later, when Bing was hosting Hollywood Palace, I was a guest star on the show. So it's just, you know, having done commercials on a Jerry Lewis special, which he was directing and never really finished the dress rehearsal, but then to work clubs with him and get to know him on that level, and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and all these people that I got to know and work with. My gosh, I've been very blessed, I think.
You met some of your idols from when you were growing up? As a kid, there were performers that inspired you, and then you later got to meet them and work with them?
Yeah, which is just amazing. And then when I first went to New York, and I discovered Mary Martin, when I saw Peter Pan on Broadway, and when she flew through that window. And here she was, you know, filling, I think it was the Winter Garden Theater in New York, and with this voice, and I just thought, wow. And she was just a real hero of mine. And then she became a very dear friend. And it was so interesting. The day that she died, she lived in Palm Springs, and my husband and I were going down to see her. She wanted to see me. And we were just getting ready to leave L.A., and I get a phone call saying that she had just passed away. And so, you know, I was very upset, even though it was expected. But we went into a hotel here in Marina Del Rey, and and we were going to have some breakfast. And on the, you know, the music, the canned music, came a song, Speak Low, which was, she sang very early in her career. I think it was from Lute's song, I'm not sure. But, and there was her voice, and I thought, wow, that's Mary, that's powerful.
Wow, that is interesting, huh? Well, that leads me to think about how much in your book you talk about spirituality and religion. Is that still really important in your life?
Spirituality is very important in my life. Organized religion, not so important. But, yes, faith and prayer, and that's all very much a part of my life.
When did it kind of transition for you from organized religion to not so much organized religion?
I don't know. I think as you evolve as a human being and you think more for yourself and you start living life, and life comes and throws you challenges, you know, like divorce and, of course, in the Catholic religion, which I was raised in, you do not remarry or you're out of the church, and things like that. And I thought, you know, that's not fair. And the fact that, you know, priests couldn't marry, and so many things about that I began to question. And I just, you know, started searching out other religions, Eastern religions, and so forth and so on. And I just found other ways and other ways of thinking. And I still have tremendous respect for Catholicism. I still, you know, I think the Mass is a fabulous ritual. But I don't feel compelled that I have to go to a church to pray or to worship. Go sit under a tree.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. We return now to my 2013 interview with the late, great Florence Henderson. Do you still feel, you know, every once in a while, do you still feel the voice of your mother or the preacher, you know, warning you about hell and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I think you always hear that, but it doesn't scare me like it used to. I mean, oh, my gosh. Yeah, I was terrified of the devil till I was in my early 20s. I was sure that, you know, the devil was right around the corner. And, yeah, I wouldn't see Rosemary's Baby. I mean, yeah, but I think you mature, and I have tremendous respect for all religions. I mean, Judaism, Catholicism, Buddhism, you name it. I have great respect for it. Now, everybody, I think, is trying to get to the same place and essentially saying the same thing. I don't like religions that are not inclusive, you know, that exclude people.
Yeah. You're also a hypnotherapist.
Yes.
What does that mean exactly?
What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, how do you practice hypnotherapy?
Well, it's an avocation of mine because I work so much in my first vocation, but it's a modality that allows you to includes hypnosis, and which allows people, you know, to change negative behavior, to motivate them, to have them live a more positive life. Hypnosis is a very powerful tool. And I was helped greatly through hypnotherapy. And so I went to school and I learned how to do it.
And do you have clients who come to you?
I've mostly done it with for friends, and you know, it's certainly, I would never charge anyone for it.
Mm. Well, you've hypnotized us all over the years with the Brady Bunch. Now, that show's been on, it's never off the air. It's on constantly.
Right.
How did the Brady Bunch come about?
Well, I was out in California doing a Dean Martin show. I lived in New York City, and I was doing, you know, all the variety shows, as I mentioned. And I was, you know, doing Broadway and my own show, my Nightclub Act, and all of that. And I get a call, would I go down to Paramount Studios and meet these producers and director about a TV series? And I said, I don't want to do a TV series. And my agent said, well, just go down and meet them. And I was going to leave later that night for a show in Houston, Texas. And so I went down, and I met them all, John Rich and Sherwood Schwartz and Doug Kramer and all of these people, and they asked if I would put something on film. And I said, as long as I make my plane to Houston. And anyway, I did. I did a scene on film and caught my plane. And the next day, I'm rehearsing and getting ready to open in my act. And the phone rang, and my agent said, can you come right back to L.A.? They want you for the pilot. So I had to go to the hotel owner and say, you know, this is what happened, and if this series is a hit, I'll come back for the same money, and so forth and so on. And we got someone to fill in for me, and I came back and did the pilot, and the rest is history.
Well, you know, some classic sitcoms, you know, they were treasured in their day, and when they went off the air, they had final episodes and so forth. I think with you guys, you didn't even know you had done your final episode at the time.
And it had just, no idea.
And then it was just over. Did you expect that it would have this life that would go on for
a decade? No, I had no idea that. I mean, you know, I have a website. I get so much mail on there, but just fans and young people who've discovered it, or young parents who want their children to watch it, and mail from all over the world. I've been getting so much mail lately from Russia and Poland and places like that.
Really?
I've always gotten a tremendous amount of mail from Germany, and I get mail from India, and now I get mail from China. And
the Brady Bunch is in its first run over in some of those places?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And are you proud of the Brady Bunch? Do you think it's a good show?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I'm very proud of it.
What makes it a great show?
Well, I can't really define it, but I think it represented what everyone wishes they had, and very few people do, which is a loving family. You know, you fight, you make up, you teach your kids to tell the truth, to honor their parents, their teachers. I don't know. I just think it was a very positive little show, and it's almost like a children's book. You know, it's seen through the eyes of a child, that gentleness, I think, which resonates with people.
One of the things I think is striking about the Brady Bunch is the colors on the show.
Yes. Well, you know, we were shot like a film.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had the single camera. We were so thrilled when we had an extra camera come in, like to cover close-ups.
Right, because otherwise you did it like a movie where you shot it
exactly.
All day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's held up very well because of that.
Yeah, well, it really is striking. I mean, who was responsible for all those wild colors on the show?
Oh my God, I would have to say probably it all started with Sherwood. I think he was a great producer. I think he had very definite ideas about what he wanted, and I mean, I look at some of the clothes that we wore and my hairdos. I don't know what
hair,
I was thinking.
Yeah.
but we set a lot of trends, you know. It was amazing.
Your hair was always
every
season.
And the 70s, those clothes, which now when I see a guy with plaid pants and a striped shirt, I go, oh, you obviously grew up with the Brady Bunch.
Well, you know, all of us have, you know, family photos or yearbook photos or whatever that we'd never want to look at again, and we see them,
exactly.
We go, oh my God. But in your case, you know, it's all on film forever.
Yep, there it is. There it is, ready or not.
But you always
but, you know, I would rather be remembered and liked for something like that rather than something hateful and nasty that has had a very negative effect on people. So,
well, it's a great show. It's a classic. It's one of the great.
It's just a little classic that, you know, it's a little show that could.
And I'm sure everybody wants to know this. I think they ask you this all the time. Are you in touch with your Brady children?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am. And, with all of them, actually. And Ann B. Davis.
Mm.
Yeah.
She was great.
Terrific. I mean, She's been in a religious community in Texas for many, many years, and just a great lady.
And what? And she was one of those great television character actors. She was Schultze in Love That Man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, she was great. She was wonderful. You never did another series. Were you tempted to do another? Well, you did some other Brady kind of sequels, but...
Yeah, we did a lot of those. I don't know. My career's always gone in so many different directions, and I just kind of, go with the flow. I just figure, that's where I'm supposed to be, and, I think, who knows, tomorrow I may be doing a big sitcom. Who knows?
Well, people are, and it's wonderful to say, but people are living a lot longer and being a lot younger than they used to be. Betty White is a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
But you did the Dancing with the Stars. I don't know if you were the, I don't want to say the word old.
Numerically or new, I might have. No, I think Cloris Leachman might have been older, and I'm not sure about Buzz Aldrin. But I don't even think about that.
Do you feel the same age?
I try to stay in shape. I work out. I take reasonably good care of myself. But I think it's more your spirit, your joy, and what are you doing in life? When I would finish one of the dance numbers, I wasn't breathing nearly as heavily as some of the younger ones, and nor as many aches and pains. So I think it's all relative. Everyone has to get older, but nobody has to get old, and I think that starts with the mind, and then it goes from there.
Do you still feel a drive for your career?
Yes, absolutely. I love to work. And, I'm going to Indianapolis on Sunday to do a big infomercial there for a company. And then I was invited to New York for the anniversary of the Today Show because I was a Today girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, having done all these things, it keeps you kind of out there.
And now you're an author. The book is called Life is Not a Stage, From Broadway Baby to Lovely Lady and Beyond. And the author is Florence Henderson. Florence Henderson, thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Gary Shapiro. It's so nice to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in quite a while.
Florence Henderson. She died last month at the age of 82. Now that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro, and I will see you again next week. Thanks for listening.